You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a very warm welcome along to the Daily Racing Podcast brought to you by William Hill. You join us on Tuesday's edition of the podcast. We're looking ahead to the afternoon racing from Chepstow, Wetherby and Yarmouth. There's two jumps meetings as well on Tuesday at both Fontwell and Suddle. You'll hear every race live, of course, in the Racing Radio studio in the company of Darren Owen, Gary Caporal and Kevin O'Malley from 1:50pm on Tuesday. My name is Sam Norris and joining me on today's podcast is Oliver Pimlott. How are you, Ollie?
Good afternoon, Sammy Norris.
You well?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good, good. Enjoy Derby weekend. Were you satisfied with the Derby, Ollie, or did it leave you lacking a little bit?
I think the Coolmore team will be a little bit unsatisfied because a 40-1 winner doesn't necessarily make a million-pound-making stallion.
Stud, yeah.
But I don't think there was any fluke about the win. Mm. I mean, he was stopped in his passage on a couple of times,
yeah,
and he still won going away. Wings of Eagles, so there was definitely no fluke about it, but it just left a little bit of a sour taste in the mouth, given that he was a 40-1 shot,
yeah,
unconsidered.
I suppose the fact that Ballydoyle threw so many darts at the board, Ollie, perhaps suggested that they weren't exactly convinced that Cliffs of Moher was going to be all that. They were maybe thinking that there isn't a great deal between them. Obviously, the betting separated the six that he sent, but the fact that he sent so many into the race perhaps suggested that he didn't have a
firm hand. Yeah, and we were talking about it not being the strongest of derbies before it started, and sort of the result muddied the waters even more. Cliffs of Moher ran his race, didn't he? I thought he was going to win his race. Perhaps a mile and a half just stretched him. I think possibly they could go for the Coral Eclipse now over a little bit shorter next time up. So, Eminent. Perhaps he didn't stay.
Yeah.
I thought he was coming to win his race and it just flattened out in the latter stages. And Cracksman, I thought, was the one to take out of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he's just still so green. He was off the bridle early. Frankie was pumping him. And
First one to work, really.
Yeah, very, very similar to when he just got up
at Epsom to beat
Permian on his last start. Perhaps with a run in the Dante, might have just brought him on that little bit more. Obviously, there's only 2 weeks between the Dante and the Derby, and that's why they didn't want him to run him on the heavy ground. But perhaps if he'd ran in the Dante on good ground, that might have just helped him more mentally than physically. But I think Cracksman probably the one to take out of it.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Let's start this podcast then with a little look at the Monday jury then, which centres around some of the key talking points from the weekend. And first up, surrounding that Derby, who would you fancy in an Irish Derby rematch from Epsom? Looks as though the Ballydoyle contingent are going to go in separate ways, and Wings of Eagles will no doubt be a pretty warm order at the Curragh.
You would have thought so. I don't think Padraig Beggy will be riding it next time. I think Mr. Moore
Ryan might
have
over.
Something to say about that. You can't crab the way Wings of Eagles won. If anything, you'd probably say he wants further because, you know, the way he ran to the line, he looks an ideal St. Ledger type because he ran to the line, you know, doing handstands in the end, having been checked twice. He finished really strongly, whereas you look at the likes of Cliffs of Moher, he will probably be better for a drop backing trip. As I say, the Coral Eclipse has been mentioned. But as we just mentioned there, I like Cracksman.
Yeah.
He just looks a big raw baby who will improve for that run. I don't think the track particularly suits, so a flatter track at the Curragh for the Irish Derby should be right up his street.
Cracksman and Wings of Eagles, the 5-2 joint favourites then for the Irish Derby, should they meet again. There's nothing to choose between them in the betting at time of recording. Next question then, what Derby runner further down the field do you want to keep on side? We mentioned Cracksman, obviously, but there were a few eye-catching runs in behind.
I thought no more so than Douglas MacArthur, a 16-1 shot for the Irish Derby. I thought he was going to win it at one point.
Yeah, definitely.
He was in there as a pacemaker, was in front for a long time. And they only just passed him well inside the final furlong. He was only beaten less than 5 lengths. So, you know, given he was pumped away, you know, having to be a pacemaker in the field. He ran a tremendous race. Perhaps that tells you the strength of the Derby itself, the fact he was only beaten less than five lengths. But, you know, at face value, that looked a tremendous run. And you know, with the petrol gauge not quite used up so early,
yeah,
he could well be up to winning a group race. Mm,
definitely. Were you a little bit surprised to see him on pacemaking duties, given that Connections had the anvil, which also went out in front, and that is 125-1 shot, looked a more appropriate pacemaker compared to a horse that has actually won the Derrynstown Stud, has won a Derby trial? Do you think it? And
perhaps they thought the anvil couldn't take them along.
Yeah.
Perhaps they didn't think he was good enough to take them along for far enough. Right. Douglas McCarker was certainly that, because he led them into the final furlong. Mm. So they might have a rethink. Capri also ran well, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he'll appreciate a little bit easier ground, which you would have thought you would get for the Irish Derby. Mm. Eminent. I'm not sure about Eminent, because I thought he came to win his race and didn't quite perhaps stay. Son of Frankel, of course.
We all thought in the guineas, oh, he's going to improve for a step up in trip, yeah. And then now
it's a big step up in trip. It's half a mile, isn't it? You're going a mile to a mile and a half, perhaps an intermediate trip of a mile and two might be what Eminent wants. By no means was he disgraced. He ran a cracking race to be just touched off the third, but I'm not quite sure he'd just stay that mile and a half trip.
Yeah.
I think he might be better over a little bit shorter.
Okay, going back to Friday then, how strongly do you rate Enable's win in the Oaks? Obviously, got the better of Rhododendron in eye-catching fashion on Friday.
Yeah, I just think she looks a thorough stayer, Eminent. Obviously, Frankie made plenty of use
Enable.
Of her. Enable,
yeah.
I should say. In contrast to Eminent.
Indeed.
Made plenty of use of a Frankie in horrific conditions, teaming down with rain. You're not going to get much worse than that. Looks a thorough stayer. I would have thought that the St. Ledger has to be high on their list of priorities now. We all know fillies have a real good record in the St. Ledger in recent years, and by no means was she stopping at the line. I think Rhododendron was just outstayed on that occasion. She was, and Rhododendron, we know, proven Group 1 filly.
Yeah.
I was very, very impressed with Enable, and I think they'll give the Ledger a shot now.
Okay.
It is on the back of a long season, isn't it? We've got a long way to go till the final classic of the season, but for me, fillies have got a great record in the race. I think she's bound to stay. And we know the St. Ledger in recent years has been poor.
Yeah, sure.
She could just be an absolute standout. So,
yeah.
Enable, for me, if it was my horse, all roads would lead to the St. Ledger.
Okay, fair enough. Next up, can Highland Reel win back-to-back King George's next month? We saw him victorious on the downs over the last few days. And the horse looked absolutely awash with sweat, Ollie. He didn't necessarily travel as well as you might have liked. First run back in the UK this season, but still got the better of the field, and he's an admirable performer.
Well, he's the most underrated horse in training. he's a superstar. Let's face it, isn't he, Highland Reel, for what he's achieved, and yet
no one talks about him. Yeah,
you've got to remember as well, Sammy. He was barely at the track an hour before he ran.
Yeah.
He does get a little bit hot and warm. That's probably another factor in it, that you know he's only been at the track an hour and he's expected to run.
Yeah.
In the Coronation Cup, so there's no worries whatsoever about me why he can't follow up that King George win this year. It wasn't the greatest of races, was it?
No.
The one to take out of it for me was the second, Frontiersman.
Yeah.
Out of that great race mare, Ouija Board. Didn't seem to handle the track. He kept lugging in to the rail, didn't he?
Yeah.
Didn't handle the camber. Came from a long way back. Was very well backed late as well in the day for the Coronation Cup. Has got a progressive profile. And could well be the horse that could often really seek in a proven Group 1 performer.
Yeah.
As I say, out of Ouija Board, he's going to get better with age, and that was a career-best performance last time. I was a bit disappointed because I was on him at 4-1 for a listed race at York on the Saturday. Of course, they dodged that to go to the Coronation Cup. How much of a good thing would he have been in that
Indeed.
In hindsight? But big step forward in the Coronation Cup, and there's no reason for me why Highland Reel can't win back-to-back King George's, but I think the one to take out of it, out of the Coronation Cup, was Frontiersman. And, of course, Jack Hobbs. We've not seen him yet.
Yeah.
This season was back to his best in Dubai.
Yeah.
And he'll certainly give Highland Reel a race in the King George as well, you would have thought.
Yeah, definitely so. Penultimate question then. We're just a couple of weeks away now from Royal Ascot. Anything to take out of Epsom with Ascot in mind? We've mentioned a couple already, Ollie. Was there
Laugh Aloud is the obvious one, isn't it? I think she's going to go for the Duke of Cambridge. She won the Group 3 Princess Elizabeth. She was very, very impressive on that occasion. It'll be a similar sort of race. And provided she comes out of Epsom in decent form, she's going to be very hard to beat. But it's a hard thing to do because Royal Ascot's you know, only two or three weeks after the Epsom Derby meeting. It's a big ask. It's like from going to Cheltenham to Aintree,
sure.
for the jumps. You know, two absolute, you know, having a real hard race on a difficult undulating track, to then go to Ascot, which is completely different, flat, going the other way. It's a big, tough ask for a lot of these horses, and I think it generally proves that horses that have dodged Epsom do a lot better at Ascot. But the obvious one was Laugh Aloud, who's going to be very hard to beat, you would have thought, in the Princess Elizabeth.
Mm, indeed. And the final question, then, I'm under jury. Hopefully it's the last time we have to discuss this, Philly. What did you make of the whole Dior Alea affair, which dominated a lot of the Derby build-up and came to a conclusion when she was lame in the morning before the race?
Yeah, it was just a farce, really, wasn't it? It shouldn't have dominated any of the build-up. Obviously, it's hard because, you know, you look at Podrick Beggy, and some people would have questioned whether he should have had a ride in the Derby.
Well, I think he'd had three winners since 2015 in the UK and Ireland, had been out in Australia, ridden some winners there, but the Derby win was only his fourth victory in the UK and Ireland since 2015.
So, I mean, some people would have questioned, why is he having a ride in the Derby? He barely gets a ride. I know he's had, you know, over 100 winners, but he barely gets a ride. So it's hard, isn't it?
Definitely.
You know, we see the situation in the Grand National where jockeys have to have a certain amount of winners to ride over the fences, but equally, the amateurs who go over the same fences in the Fox Hunters there, they don't have to have I think it's four or five winners they have to have had.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So it's quite a difficult place to draw a line. I know for the likes of the Gold Cup, the Champion Hurdle and the Champion Chase now, there is a minimum rating to run in the race, and perhaps that might be brought in going forward. But you see maidens run well in the Derby in the past.
Thing, yeah.
So it's quite a difficult issue, but I think... Yeah. Much ado about nothing was made of it. I think it was just, you know, the papers trying to get a story in an event where we didn't have a Frankel or you know, a superstar going to the Derby, so they had to make a story out of something, and that's what it came to. But
yeah, sure,
it's going to be interesting going forward. I think the BHA were wrong to mention the Victoria Pendleton case and the Fox Hunters, and actually make, you know, what the hell did Victoria Pendleton have to do with that?
Yeah, sure.
The fact they brought out the press release was bizarre to me. But it is quite a difficult situation because, as I say, a lot of people could have said, well, who's this Podrick Beggy having a ride in the race who's barely had a ride in the last 5 years?
Yeah, indeed.
So it is a tough situation to be in, but I think at the end of the day it was much ado about nothing, really.
Yeah. And of course, with regards to the filly itself, no one would have raised an eyebrow if Godolphin or Coolmore were sending a twice-raced horse who'd shown nothing much in maidens into the Derby. That was well bred and was expensive, etc. So, in terms of, as you mentioned earlier, bringing in that minimum rating, it is difficult for horses who maybe only had one run, still want to run in the Derby. And as you mentioned, maidens can run well.
Yeah, then they were going to put Paddy Pilly on the horse.
Yeah, sure.
He's, you know, he's a good rider.
Yeah.
But again, he's not ridden that many winners in comparison to all the other jockeys in the race. So, I think it was more to do with the Gina Mangan riding it than the horse. But
right,
it was. Let's hope we don't. Something like that doesn't come up again.
Yes.
It took up a lot of unnecessary newspaper columns.
Without a doubt. Yes, definitely so. That's the Monday jury taken care of. Then elsewhere, just a couple of other news stories to touch on. Things seemingly not all well at Godolphin at the moment, Ali. Saeed bin Saror has rather chose to not air his dirty laundry this week, but has come out and been vocal of the problems behind the scenes.
Yeah. He wasn't happy with James Doyle being...
Yeah.
Forced upon him, basically. That's what he said as stable jockey. It was very hard to do my job properly, he said, with Doyle there. For me, James Doyle's one of the best jockeys in the world, so I'm not sure how he's come with that. But the situation seems to be with John Ferguson, which seems bizarre because he's, as you say, Sam, he's airing his dirty laundry in public. I'm not sure Sheikh Mohammed's going to take to this very well.
Yeah.
There's two situations here. Does he feel that secure in his job, Saeed bin Saror, that he can come out and say this and not feel that his job's going to be threatened?
Yeah.
Because if I said this about my boss, or somebody who's my equal in the papers, I don't think Mr. Lee Phelps, who's our boss, or Mike Grennan would take kindly to it. So he must feel very secure in his job, or he's thinking it's my way or no way. You know, it's either me or John Ferguson. So it all seems. Again, very strange.
Yeah.
But Godolphin continue to struggle behind that colossus that is Coolmore.
They do, yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned that, Ollie, because on the face of it, I would suggest Saïd bin Sarraj is perhaps more expendable than John Ferguson is from a Godolphin point of view. Are there not other very capable trainers that Godolphin could send their horses to?
Look at Ribchester.
Exactly, yeah.
They seem to be going a different way. They're buying horses. I know Richard Fite recommended Ribchester to him, and they bought it. And they're going down other way. They've got horses with different trainers now.
Yeah.
Do they have to have these two retained trainers in Charlie Appleby and Saïd bin Sarraj? I think it's a very brave game that Saïd bin Sarraj's taken.
Indeed. We'll see what pans out there at Godolphin. And one more final thing to touch on then before we move on to Tuesday's racing. The sad news that broke over the last couple of days that David Dandy Nichols has passed away at the age of 61. In his day, Ollie, a supreme trainer of sprinters.
Yeah, and a good jockey as well, of course. He was associated with Sober, who won 11 races in the 1982 season, which is unheard of nowadays. A great trainer. It's just very sad that it's ended the way way it has, obviously. He had to declare himself bankrupt. There was the impending court case as well. It's all just ended very sadly, hasn't it?
It has. It has indeed. Very, very sad news indeed regarding David Nichols. We'll move on then to take a look at some of the racing on Tuesday now. We go to Chepstow, Weatherby and Yarmouth on this edition of the Racing Podcast. Starting at Chepstow with the 3:30 handicap over 6 furlongs kicks the podcast off. 10 runners down to go to post at the time of recording. How do you sort these out, Al?
I thought this was a difficult race to kick us off, Sam. Mm. Wide open handicap, probably going to be 4 or 5 to 1 the field here. Obviously, the Shropshire Wolves have Sir Billy Wright, who's well handicapped. On old form here. Runs off a mark of 83 tomorrow. He's run off considerably higher in the past.
Yep.
Catherine Glenister, who's based with the David Evans Yard, takes the ride. So he actually caught the eye. Has been running off marks in the high 80s of late. It is starting to come down in the handicap, but arguably he needs to come down a little bit more, probably another couple of pounds. He could run off 8-1 in a 0-80. So it's one to probably keep an eye on.
Still slightly above his latest.
He's still, he last won off 82, but he's coming down, Sam.
Yeah.
So he's probably one for your notebook there. For win purposes, I was taken with Equally Fast from the Peter Hyatt stable. He travelled really well in the big field at Ascot last time. This is obviously a considerably easier race, far less runners as well. He's got a plum draw in 5, so it can go either way. They'll probably come straight down the middle of the track, so he's drawn nicely. There's a bit of pace on in the field as well. He likes to come off the pace. Say, sometimes you see eye catches and it's a quick road to the poorhouse.
Yes.
But on this occasion, Equally Fast, he's another one whose mark is plummeting. Showed up last time at Ascot like his day could be coming soon. And from a draw in 5 with quite a bit of pace in the race, I think he could be one to latch onto at a price. So Equally Fast for me, who should be a fairly decent price around about outside of the field, I think some people are flagging him up at.
Yeah, likely to be a sizeable price indeed. Ollie going with a bit of value then. Equally Fast in the opening race. Well, not the opening race at Chepstow, but the first race that we'll cover on the podcast, the 3:30. On to matters at Weatherby now. 2 races picked out at Weatherby, starting with the 4:10, which is a mile handicap, a class 4 event with 14 runners to sort out here. And flat racing at Weatherby, Ollie, draw is everything.
Yeah, you need to be drawn low. I wouldn't be surprised if we have a few horses pull out stiff in the morning or not eating up drawn.
The old Chester factor.
Drawn 11 and 10 here.
Yes.
The likes of Stanley out in 13. He's got a lot of work to do drawn out in 13. So it does tend to concentrate on the horses drawn on the inside. Like no other, he's drawn 1 for Lesaire. That's been in good form. Gelding by approved, finished 2nd last time we saw it. That was at Weatherby. Over course and distance, so that's obviously a factor to take in, and stepped up markedly on its comeback run at Newcastle, where it could only beat 4 runners home when 9th of 13. So an in-form horse with a good draw like no other, lingers at the bottom of the weights as well, carries 9'3". The one I was going to go with here was the one drawn next to it, Red Touch for Mick Appleby and Ali Rawlinson, drawn in stall 2. Been running decent races without quite getting its head in front, Red Touch. Finished 4 for 7 last time at Southwell. Generally plies its trade on the all weather. We've not seen it on the turf for quite a long time. I think we last saw it on the turf back in 2015 at Redcar off a mark of 70. Competes off a mark here on the turf of 75. And I think with Ali Ronson taking three off, been running well in the all weather of late, switched back to the turf. I thought that was an eye catcher, and especially with its draw. So, and yet another wide open race. Red touch for me. Should be an each way price in the 4.10.
Red touch then to get the better of like no other in that 4.10 at Wetherby. We stay at Wetherby then for the 4.40. Just half an hour later, a handicap over 7 furlongs this time. One or two interesting individuals here, Ollie. Plenty bring winning form into the race, and just a couple of potentially unexposed three-year-olds lurking. An intriguing three-year-old handicap, I thought.
Yeah, the first one to probably make mention of is Golden Apollo. Finished last season in winning form and probably ran a career best. This son of Pivotal when finishing fourth in a very strong York handicap on his reappearance. Runs off the same mark here, so the handicapper has left him off a mark of 81, which I think is fair because he could well have punished him for that run last time. But as you say, Sam, there's plenty of improving three-year-olds in this race, no more so than Merlin, who's going to be my selection. He's another one who's got well drawn in four, an improving son of Oasis Dream. This horse has only been seen at the track four times. Has been quietly campaigned, you'd argue. Only finished 8 for 11 at Yarmouth, stepped up markedly on that to finish second in a maiden. Then this year was second at Redcar and then went one better at Nottingham. That was in a maiden stakes when even favourite. Probably not the strongest of races on paper on that occasion, but being a son of Oasis Dream has been brought along quietly by Michael Bell in the general Michael Bell sort of way. He doesn't overface his two-year-olds, and this looks just an absolute nailed-on improver off a mark of 79. As I say, probably didn't win the strongest of races at Nottingham last time, but has improved with every run, and I think can improve again here from a good draw in four. So Merlin for me in the 4.40 at Wetherby.
Could be a royal winner then. Merlin for Her Majesty the Queen in the 4.40 at Wetherby gets the vote. And on to Yarmouth for the final race on today's podcast. This is the 4.20 at Yarmouth. Another mile handicap to sort out. Just six of them go to post this time. How do you assess this contest?
I thought this was an interesting race, Sam, because you've got horses who we know everything about. And we've got a horse in Singapore Sling who we actually don't know a great deal about. He's had the three starts on the flat, and he's had one start over jumps, which didn't quite go to plan. He was pulled up in a juvenile hurdle at Warwick, but showed a lot more back in December when he was second at a maiden at Newcastle, beaten two lengths by Roller, a horse of Mick Easterby's on that occasion. They pulled five lengths clear of the others there. And Roller since has proved the form to be pretty strong. Because since then, he's gone up to a mark of 84. He's finished third, he's won second and sixth. So Roller, when he won at Newcastle, didn't have a mark. They originally gave him 77. He's now up to a mark of 84. Singapore Sling here makes his handicap debut off 73. Mm. So going through a straight line through that Roller form at Newcastle, he's well handicapped. Where's the first time hood? Didn't settle and certainly didn't stay when pulled up at Warwick on his only start over hurdles. So they put the hood on him off a mark of 73. The fact that they've kept the faith with it, lightly raced, should be improved as a four-year-old. And as I say, we know plenty about the other horses here. Thakar, Intrude, Secor, Barari and Aqua Libra. They've all had plenty of chances. But Singapore Sling, very lightly raced. Just had the four starts, three on the flat. First time hood through the mark of that Roller run, who's now officially rated 84. Is well handicapped off a mark of 73, and I think the first time hood might well work the Oracle. So Singapore Sling would be my best bet of the four races we looked at tomorrow, who looks very well handicapped off a mark of 73.
The lightly raced Singapore Sling then in the 4.20 gets the vote for Ollie at Yarmouth. Thank you very much for that, Ollie. Remember to tune into the action live on William Hill's Racing Radio from 1:50 p.m. on Tuesday. Darren Owen, Gary Capel and Kevin O'Malley in the studio for Chepstow, Wetherby and Yarmouth in the afternoon. Fontwell and Suttle in the evening. You've been listening to the Daily Racing Podcast. Thank you very much for that, Oliver, and enjoy the racing throughout the rest of the week.
Sam, a pleasure.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.